Now David discusses how disassembling the ego does not necessitate abandoning ordinary life, but to recontextualize it. He also talks about how this even fits into the business world.
You see money as a benefit, and you all see it's a wonderful thing. But you also see it's not going to bring happiness. Not going to bring happiness. So you stop elaborating it to some magical, mystical proportion. Money is a convenience. It's easier to take a cab than walk. But that's only a convenience, isn't it? So primarily, it increases the enjoyment of life. If you know how to get the enjoyment out of life, you don't really need much of anything. The business is an expression of that which is contributory to the world. You're one of the working gears of the world. Without you, it can't work. So you become the working gears by which mankind then supplies his own needs. So business is just one particular type of enterprise. What you're really saying is, what's the intrinsic value of enterprise itself? Well, it's survival plus pleasure in survival, and it's success in the human lifetime. So whether that survival is raising chickens and selling the eggs, or having a truck and driving manure around, or hiring somebody else to drive the truck, or getting a fleet of trucks, or becoming the manure baron of the Upper East Side, you're serving the needs of mankind. So you're being a cog in the wheel. Without each cog, the wheel can't turn. So I think whatever anybody's doing contributes to the all. You can't live without shoes. You have to have a cobbler. You can't wash your clothes without soap. You can't do anything without water. So everyone contributes. We project assumed values on those colorations. But in and of themselves, all work is honorable. All work is honorable. And what makes it honorable is the intention. So I say the woman peeling potatoes is performing an act of devotion. She's doing it out of love for her family. She's doing it as an expression of the positive side of her femininity. She's accepting God's abundance on the earth in the form of a potato. So every act by intention becomes transfigured by the intention behind it.
Next, David talks about how this applies to personal relationships.
In the beginning, it's usually for gain. The two see each other, the gaining of a mate, the gaining of sexual expression, the gaining of being wanted, etc. They see it as a gain, primarily. So if you picture the two people as two vertical lines, parallel lines, standing next to each other, you'll see that the attachment goes from the middle of the line to the middle of the line of the other person, in other words, really the solar plexus. Although it dips down to the lower chakras, it involves sexuality and all this. The magnetism is really the gain of the relationship. More mature, more spiritually evolved, and usually those that even start out at the most attached, egoistic level, if they're successfully evolved, now the alignment goes heart to heart. So instead of being a horizontal, me and you horizontal, attachment, that's an attachment, it becomes two parallel lines aligned in the same direction. Now their relationship is unified by the fact that they share a common goal. So if their common goal is unconditional love, then the relationship serves endless opportunities to be forgiving, to overlook, to understand. So it's the difference between attachment and alignment. So a mature relationship, the people are aligned, and in less mature, they're attached. So with more greater maturity, then people experience the intrinsic value of the lovingness of the other person. Your lovingness is facilitated by the return of lovingness. So what you have become, it's not what you get from each other, but what you have become to each other, requires nothing on the part of the other person. They don't have to do anything or be any certain way or say a certain thing or dress any certain way, or they don't have to do what you want them to do. They're completely satisfying just being what they are and who they are. They can sit out in the car all by themselves, and you feel very satisfied. You know they're there. They know you're here. You're both complete and total. Rate of happiness, this is a little bit different way of doing it. The log of the calibrated level of consciousness, what is the percent of happiness? Happiness is a consequence of level of consciousness, not a consequence of what you own in the world or to what titles you have or whether you're pretty or famous. If you are at 250, which is comfortable, the chances are about 60% of people there are going to be happy. So the way to achieve happiness is not through out there, but in here. You can't achieve happiness by acquisition. You can only achieve it through advancing your level of consciousness. You see that people at the bottom, their rate of happiness is zero. The rate of happiness down here, below consciousness level. So 200 again is the critical line. Above 200, 55% of the people are happy. And the minute you go below the line, it drops to 22%. There is no way to make these people happy. There's no way and nothing you can do that will make people who calibrate below 200 happy. Nothing. Give up your life, give up your property, turn over your country, turn over your wife, turn over your children, enslave everybody, and you will not make them happy. Here, I thought we were going to make the world happy. Huh? You cannot make these people happy. You cannot live in hate, etc., and be happy. So, for the sake of your own happiness, then, but because as your level of consciousness rises, you see you're lifting the world. The only chance of these people being happy is by you being happier. That's the only thing you can do. As you become enlightened and happy, you radiate it out in energy. And I've walked through dangerous places. I mean, dangerous like I don't want to tell you. With complete safety. And all the guys just looked at me in amazement. A cutthroat gang with whips and knives, guns and chains. And here's this short little shrimp walking right through the middle of them. And I walked through absolutely untouched. A 6'6" professional athlete would never even tackle this crowd. All of them, whips, knives, guns, and malice, and tattooed from head to foot, and roaring their motorcycles, and just waiting for a roof, something to start up. And I went right through all of them. I thought they were great looking guys, you know. It reminded me of my lifetime as a pirate. They were just my buddies on the ship, you know, cutthroats. Everybody was a cutthroat. I mean, what's wrong with that? So I've been in very unsafe places and come out of it alive, you know, in Sampan outside of Shanghai and various places where I should have been killed, robbed, and tattooed. But they delivered me home and put me on the doorstep, you know. So it's what you become and not what you do.